Well, good morning, everyone. It's good to be back in Pennsylvania, and better yet, to be home and here with you this morning. Brother Clinton had called me and wondered if I would share a little bit, and I wasn't sure when we'd be getting back exactly. And as I was working with Galen there to wrap things up and figure out when we're coming back, he said it would probably be good if the ASWs would leave Friday so that the rest of us could clean up, so that the rest of us could drive home Saturday, so we wouldn't have to drive Sunday. Well, as it goes with us efficient Lebanon Lancaster County people, why we were the ASWs left. We're going to have them out by 6 Friday morning. I think a few of them came back Thursday and said, "Hey, can we leave early?" So we left them go at 3 o'clock in the morning Friday morning. And my wife and my schedule was getting up early every morning, well, by 5:30 in the morning, we're up cleaning up. So anyway, to make a long story short, by noon Friday, we had everything cleaned up and we're on our way. So we rolled in here 3:48 Saturday morning. Galen said, "Text him when we get home," and I remember sending a text at 3:48. So anyway, I was thinking a little bit this morning about dedications, being dedicated. You may turn in your Bibles to 1 Chronicles 7:17, where I'll be reading from a little later. I'm thinking of dedications. Being dedicated, we had 4 dedications down there, and I had to think of the children of Israel coming out of Egypt, and how they went through a lot, and eventually they came to the time of the building of the temple. The building of the temple was complete, and there was a great dedication there, and we were also having home dedications there in Mayfield. But before I read this chapter and get into that, I thought I would just give you a little bit of the story of the tornado in Mayfield from the point of view of a weatherman. It says, this man's name was Trent Okerson. He said, "For more than 3 days, Trent Okerson had been telling the people of Mayfield, Princeton, and Dawson Springs that something was coming as a storm system developed in Arkansas and Missouri and boiled towards Kentucky. Hours before the storm made their deadly landing, Okerson calmly told viewers the exact path the storm would take. He told them the minute it would arrive. He said it would be a violent night. Sadly, his forecast was precisely right. Tuesday, December 7th, this storm happened on December the 10th, hit Mayfield exactly 9:27 p.m. on December 10th. Well, this was Tuesday, December 7th, like 3 days ahead. We started noticing what looked like a severe weather signature forming out west. We drew our outlook map, and we started telling our viewers to stay in touch. I was concerned," he says. "Thursday, December 9th, I told the viewers, we were seeing severe weather parameters we have never seen before in our area. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the highest chance of severe weather, we were already at a 5 or 6, with the storm still several states to the west. Friday, December 10, the significant tornado parameters now pegged at an 8 or 9, Okerson said. We were going to have a disaster, and the track was becoming clearer. We escalated to weather authority coverage, which means they can break into their programming at any time. This 7:48 p.m., this thing looks really, really nasty," Okerson told viewers. "I try not to use hyperbole, which means exaggeration, or scare people so that when I need them to pay attention, they know I mean it. 8:44, the station was on constant coverage, and the storm moved closer and gathered strength. Mayfield," he said, "could expect a direct hit at 9:27 p.m. There is no reason to think this is not going to go on. This is an extremely rare, incredibly dangerous, long track trail tornado, which means just for many miles it was going to be on the ground. And they could track it ahead of time pretty well. The threat turned into a promise. Workers at one local factory had time to get to safety, but many others didn't. Families huddled in bathrooms. People living in mobile homes left. One man sat in his bathtub and prayed. He says, if you have a bike helmet, put it on. If you have a baseball helmet, put it on. Mayfield, it is coming for you. There is no reason to believe it won't. Okerson said something he never said before. This is a life-threatening tornado, he said. It is here. It is on top of you right now. You have to be in your place of shelter. This is an extremely dangerous, catastrophic tornado that we are dealing with. He pointed to the debris signature on his radar, which indicated the storm was already inhaling trees. You see this ball right here? He said, there is zero doubt that we have incredible damage being done right now with this storm. It was still moving through what was mostly sparsely populated rural countryside, but it was heading for bigger towns. Over and over, he implored people to get to a safe place, take cover, evacuate mobile homes. I told people, in my 14 years on the air, I've never seen anything like this on radar for our area. Mayfield, there is no doubt this storm is headed, this was 9:08 p.m., there is no doubt this storm is headed in our direction. It is producing a life-threatening, very destructive tornado. If you live in a mobile home in Mayfield, you have to get out of it. Get to a neighbor's house, a friend, a family, and get to a home and put as many walls between you and the outside as you can. Robert Lowry lived in a mobile home outside Mayfield. When they told me exactly where it was coming, I was leaving. He said, you need to leave and find somewhere to go. And that is exactly what I did. Less than 20 minutes later, after we left, the house was gone. Thousands of people's lives changed that night, Ogerson said, looking at the floor. Nobody watching him Friday night knew that he was running a fever during the marathon coverage that he was on the air. Around 3:15, he collapsed into bed, got back a few hours later, and sent his boss a message, which Ogerson allowed me to share. I can't stop crying this morning. I hope we did enough last night. That was the worst night of my career. I'm really shook up, just heartbroken. And then the testimony of this man that got out of the trailer. It says, they saved my life, my brother's life, my wife, my mother, every one of them, he said. We got every vehicle we had and drove them out of here. If we hadn't, we wouldn't have no cars, we wouldn't have no life, and we wouldn't be here. And this weatherman, when he was hired, they asked him, what's your job going to be? And he said, well, forecast the weather. And his boss said, no, your job is not to forecast the weather. Your job is to save lives. And so as he was returning to the office that morning, hey, Trent, what do we have here? The response was quick and quiet. We save lives and track storms. That's right. So anyway, that gives you a little bit of the perspective from a weatherman's perspective. What were we doing there? Well, we followed up a year and a quarter later, building and repairing homes. Cam has a large motto on the wall there that's at the base that says, if we build homes only of wood and stones, we have built no houses for God alone. And in talking to Gail, and I realized that when they're deciding for whom to build houses for, it's not always about the physical need, but sometimes it's about the openness or the opportunity to reach into the lives of an individual. Sometimes they even work for the rich people. They see an opportunity and openness there. Sometimes it's a bit difficult for us here in Pennsylvania to slow down and blend with their program and realize it's not about getting the job done, but it's about, you know, working with the individual. But of course, it's both. You were there to build and repair their houses. We built and repaired three main homes and had contacts with three or more other projects that were either almost finished or were in the process of being finished. We had four home dedications. A dedication would consist of three songs, devotions, and then we would give them a Bible with our signature and a comforter and just visit a while. Galen would say every time to the people that this project is not about us, it's about Jesus Christ. If it's about us, it will fail, it will not prosper. And that's a little what I'm thinking of this morning. With dedications, is my life dedicated to Christ and everything I'm doing? Is it all for the glory of God? In Amazing Grace, it says, the fourth verse, through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. 'Tis grace has brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home. Doing a dedication on a home kind of brought the project together, reminding the homeowner how far they've come. From the beginning of the project until the time of the dedication, and reminding them that to go on, they need their lives and everything they have to be dedicated to Christ. They are on a journey. We are on a journey. The children of Israel were on a journey. We've been through many trials, toils, and snares. Are we moving forward as God would have us to? Are we where we should be in the experience? Is Egypt out of our hearts? Are we where we should be? I cringe at the thought of, there Caleb and Joshua, the children of Israel, wanting to go back to Israel or back to Egypt. There's literally no hope if we go in that direction. It's a very desperate, perilous, hopeless situation to think of going back to Egypt. 2 Chronicles 7:11, here in this chapter in 2 Chronicles. The children of Israel had been through many dangers, trials. They came out of bondage through the Red Sea, the desert. And their maturity was being developed under Joshua and Caleb and King David. And here they were dedicating the temple under Solomon there as a place for God to dwell. And it was kind of a high point. It was a very high point, the dedication of the temple. And at last they had peace during the reign of Solomon. And I'm not sure how many years it lasted there, but it was a beautiful reign of peace, a glorious time. And yet we see our need to move on. And are we where we should be? How far has our temple developed in its maturity so God can dwell with us? And what jumped out to me in this chapter on the dedication, in verse 17, it says, as for thee, if thou wilt walk before me as David thy father walked, that conditional, if thou wilt walk before thee, before me. You could think about that for a long time. What is all encompassed in that? If thou wilt walk before me as David thy father walked, and do according to all that I have commanded thee, and shalt observe my statutes and my commandments, then will I establish the throne of thy kingdom. This time I think I'll read the chapter of starting at verse 11, 2 Chronicles 7, verse 11. Thus Solomon finished the house of the Lord and the king's house, and all that came into Solomon's house to make in the house of the Lord and in his own house he prosperously effected. And the Lord appeared to Solomon by night and said unto him, I have heard thy prayer and have chosen this place for myself for an house of sacrifice. If I shut up heaven that there be no rain, or if I command the locusts to devour the land, or if I send pestilence among my people, if my people which are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land. Now mine eyes shall be open and my ears attent unto the prayer that is made in this place. For now have I chosen and sanctified this house, that my name may be there forever, and mine eyes and mine heart be there perpetually. And as for thee, if thou wilt walk before me, as David thy father walked, and do according to all that I have commanded thee, and shalt observe my statutes and my commandments and my judgments, then will I establish the throne of thy kingdom according as I have covenanted with David thy father, saying, there shall not fail thee a man to be ruler in Israel. But if you turn away and forsake my statutes and my commandments, which I have set before you, and shall go and serve other gods and worship them, then will I pluck them up by the roots out of my land which I have given them, and this house which I have sanctified for my name, will I cast out of my sight, and will make it to be a proverb and a byword among all nations. And this house which is high shall be an astonishment to every one that passes by it, so that he shall say, Why hath the Lord done thus unto this land and unto this house? And it shall be answered, Because they forsook the Lord God of their fathers, which brought them forth out of the land of Egypt, and laid hold on other gods, and worshipped them, and served them. Therefore hath he brought all this evil upon them. So that conditional, if thou wilt walk before me, is a challenge to me to remember to continue to walk before the Lord and have our lives dedicated, realizing we're on a journey, we're stepping forward step by step. Are we walking before the Lord, and are we making the progress of maturity that we're supposed to? Just a little bit more here. I didn't talk much about kind of our responsibilities there. My responsibilities was mostly the scheduled. There was no such thing as unscheduled time, so every even unscheduled free time was scheduled. So I kept the schedule going there. I did things like filling propane tanks. One day I took the dump trailer and a load of garbage to the dump, visited all the job sites, planned all the weekend activities, and just tried to keep things going smoothly there. I would especially like to applaud the cooks and all they did. We had two boys that were extremely allergic to peanuts, so literally cooking safety was a life and death matter. I applaud them in accepting that responsibility. And then, of course, everyone else working together, building the homes, crew leaders, ASWs, relationships, and all that. I especially enjoyed the vocational trainings. I didn't know how that would all come together. I needed about one a week, or I guess we had two a week one time. So I needed about five, and that's exactly how many volunteers I had. Enoch Hoover did John Deere diesel engines, and I wasn't sure how much time they needed, so they thought maybe half an hour. Well, we filled up an hour, and so they were still going. So Enoch Hoover did John Deere diesel engines. Daniel Malangowski did small engines. Caleb Verkler did maple syrup production research and bookkeeping. Just a lot of interesting things there on... and he brought maple syrup, and we all had samples of that. And Ethan did saw milling, and how to mill and cut logs for greatest strength, and different ways to cut logs, and how to use a sawmill, the technology of saw blades, all those kind of things. That was very interesting. And then Chadwin did music. That was this past Tuesday night. So also I brought coming home Mayfield Strong, something that Edith gave us all to take one along home. This has a little article, Disaster Response Services from Christian Aid Ministries. It has a picture of Jason and Catherine Gingrich. They were the owners of the base there. And they attended Hickory Mennonite Church, which we attended, got to learn to know them. And then it was Gail and Detweiler, the project coordinator, and Edith Cover, the disaster response services secretary. So I'll put this back there if you just want to look at it. It's a picture of them, and then some pictures of the base itself. And actually, there's pictures in here of those that perished in the tornado also, and the whole rebuilding. All right. Thank you very much, and good to be back. Get back into normal life once again. So God bless you as you continue. continue to serve him here.